Brother Duane reminded me that there is no news reporter here this morning, so that was a comforting thought that I had forgotten from the last time. But the greatest news reporter is here, isn't he? God is here recording what for posture we are in this morning, as far as whether we're here worshiping, whether we're not, we've got a grade. Whether we just sang the songs or whether we thought about what we were singing, God gave us a grade. God is ever present. May we ever keep that in mind. The title of my message this morning that I felt led to share here is Four Places to Help Us Understand Life. Four Places to Help Us Understand Life. You know, sometimes we say, well, I want to take my children to this certain place. We feel there's just something there that they can learn or that they should know to help them get a broader perspective that they're unaware of. I'm fast approaching the age that I've observed some complexities of life from various vantage points. And I, too, appreciated the singing. And it caught my attention, that one, that last verse, that we're heading toward the setting of the sun. Some of us are more keenly aware of that than maybe some of the others of us are, because we tore off more calendar pages. But, you know, we face these things in life, and we get a new vantage point because now we're here. Now we see it from through this lens. The places that I'd like to take us this morning, I saw an article that said three places to visit to understand life. It said a hospital, a prison, and a cemetery. And it caught my attention. What do I learn about life by visiting those three places? If I want to understand life, do those three places, are they complete to help me get a full spectrum of life? While they're true, they are very good basic places that give us some very basic life lessons. A hospital teaches us the value of health we take for granted. A prison teaches us that choices have consequences. And a graveyard, of course, reminds us that life is transient and we are mortal beings. We are not here to stay. But I would like to add one more institution that we need to visit regularly if we want to really understand life, and that is the house of God. So I'd like to think about those four places this morning. Learn about understanding life. What can we learn by visiting a hospital? And I think we could maybe add a nursing home as having some similar life lessons to be learned about life. You leave a hospital, you typically feel very grateful for the health you have. At least that's how it tends to work. Hospitals remind us that health is truly wealth. I mean, until we visited that relative or that friend that suddenly lost something that we hardly gave second thought to. A hospital jerks us to reality, so to speak, about what we are enjoying. Their reality check also to personal life choices. Some people are in hospitals for reasons that are totally beyond their control. There's nothing they could have done differently to prevent the experience they're going through. They're there simply by the sovereign hand of their Creator. Maybe they were in an accident. They did nothing wrong. It's simply God at work allowed this experience for them. But hospitals also speak a different language as well. In hospitals, you will find many people that are there because of life choices. Illness that was obviously self-induced in some way. And simple observation drives home the point that dreams and cars and money mean nothing when your lungs are failing because you lived a life. You had the money to buy cigarettes all your life, or that the lining of your stomach is being eaten out by years of drinking. In hospitals is where you hear the diabetic bemoaning their addiction to sweets. In the hospitals is maybe where you hear the doctor, in his best possible bedside manners, bearing the bad news to an unconsolable person that really can't reverse. There's really nothing they can do to reverse their life's choices. But they're crying for one more chance. I served as a chaplain for a period of time at the Good Sam Hospital in Lebanon. You know, people come to these crisis points in life from very, very different perspectives. And it does something to you to face the experience, to see people that are facing these things without God in their life. It does something to you. We have God in our life. We face the same hard things the world does in some way, shape, or form. But we're not there. Hopefully, we're not going to be at that point in panic mode and asking the doctor to pull out all the stops, no matter what it costs, no matter what it means. Well, outside of hospitals, in what we call normal life, we tend to take our health for granted. But hospitals and nursing homes remind us that health is fragile, and what we're enjoying today, we're not guaranteed to have tomorrow. And very likely, in some fashion, we may face exactly what the people we just visited are facing. Without health, everything else tends to diminish and lose value. Another thing that hospitals are a good teacher on is that they're a social equalizer. During COVID, my father went there because of having COVID. And when we were down in the ER, there was a man came in. They brought him in. Actually, the police were there. He was a violent person. He was known. Well, just, you know, as we would feel the lowest of the low, and the noises that I heard coming from the room across the aisle there in the ER, it was awful. I was just so thankful that I did not work in an ER. And to my surprise, the next morning when I came in to see my dad, the hospital bed beside him had that individual in, and he looked completely different and sounded completely different. You know, hospitals are a social equalizer. It's where the rich man shares the room with the poor man. A hospital is a place where people tend to look pretty much the same. You can't tell who has money and who doesn't in a hospital, can you? The rich man's whiskers grow just as fast as the poor man's. And without grooming assistance, they bear the same scruffy appearance. There's nothing to differentiate. Hospitals reveal the socioeconomic common denominator. In a hospital, you lose the props that we can hide behind in normal life to say, this is me. A hospital also teaches us about the power of human connection. It's on display very much in a hospital. Relationships seem to be more fervent. A hospital is where the children maybe tend to come and see mom or dad a bit more frequently than they would have, or maybe finally come to see mom and dad because they're not sure how long mom and dad may be here. I went to see my uncle in the hospital, and he was sitting up in his chair. I was surprised how well he looked. He had a happy expression. His wife was also there when they saw me walk in, and he asked me to pray before I left. I was not his pastor. I was just his nephew. I was not a part of his church even. But he wanted me to pray before I left. And the next morning, he was no longer here. I was in shock. Hospitals are a place where the value of relationships and friendship evidence themselves maybe in more fervent ways than they do in just normal life. The people we love dearly and relate to unselfishly in life will more likely take time for us when we are in a crisis, when we are in a hospital. It evidences the importance of relationships when we're not in those situations. Hospitals and nursing homes are a lot of times a last stops place before leaving this earth. If there is no serious complication, we likely try and avoid those places. It's because of usually typically serious complications that we end up saying this is what we need. Hospitals and nursing homes show us what the march looks like, we call life. It helps us value the current phases of life we are in, and it may help us determine what kind of person we want to be should life bring us similar complications physically. It's there maybe that we see what we don't want to be should life take us there. When talking with elderly and sick, you are exposed to the regrets and the joys and the lessons learned in their life and what really matters at the end of the day. It prompts us to think about how we want to live and be remembered or respond to. The grump and the complainer very likely just carried a disposition they already had, just carried it to the nursing home or carried it into the hospital room. Well, moving on to prisons, what can we learn from a prison? Prison is where we will see how one stupid choice can steal decades, just one drunk drive, one violent reaction, one desperate shortcut that we thought would be to our advantage. Prisons is where you will find people that would give anything to go back and relive a certain 5 minutes or 1 hour or a certain day of their life. But in prison, they can't rewind back to that point. Life has dealt its consequences. Visiting a prison can be a deeply eye-opening and transformative experience. It offers a glimpse into a world that many people were not meant to be in. Nobody was meant to be there. God provided so we don't need to be there. It can teach valuable life lessons that span moral and social and psychological and personal perspectives. As we get to know people in prison, it does something to us. As we get to see some of the conditions, now prisons have greatly improved in my lifetime. I remember being out of the area and visiting a prison that was extremely primitive. It was just breathtaking primitive. I just left there like, how can they pack that many people into that room, and how can they make it in there? Prisons remind us that choices have consequences. Seeing people incarcerated, some for decades, some for maybe shorter stints of time. But it underscores how one decision can drastically alter someone's personal path. And even when they get out, they have to meet criteria for a long time. They're not their own person. Some carry identification with them that goes with them for the rest of their life, even after they get out. It's a stark reminder of the long-term weight of our actions. Prisons can teach us to think before we act. Even a momentary lapse in judgment can have lifelong effects. But what prisons have taught me as I visited them over the years is that humanity exists behind bars. One of the heartwarming aspects of visiting incarcerated individuals is when you discover that one that has repented and is truly sorry. And they're trying to find God's will and what they can do for God while they're there. And that's inspiring. Some are remorseful. They're rehabilitating. They're using the time for Bible study. They're using it to build up their spiritual life. They're sincerely repentant and they're happy. They're living life with purpose. It's just on a much, much, much smaller piece of real estate than we are. And we go away encouraged and we can say, wow, if they can speak for the Lord like that in there, what can we do outside those walls? Prisons can teach us that we don't have to become dehumanized by a moment that became one of the lowest in our life. Everyone has a story. It's what we do with the low parts of our story that matter. We can, by God's grace, find him again, and we can let him pick us up. I was in another state for revivals, and there was a Mennonite father from their congregation where I was ministering was in prison. I didn't know, knew very little about the details of the story. It was some kind of moral failure in the home. But they said, would you like to go visit this individual? And I said, sure. They gave me a car and they gave me the address to the prison. So I went there, and I was quite shocked. I was used to either hands-on visits, earlier days where you sit at a table, or later years is through the phone and the glass, and I hated those kind of visits, but it was what it was. But when I walked into the prison, this man came walking to me. I was barely inside the door, and he was basically free, and he had an office right beside the chaplain's office, a desk right beside the chaplain's desk, just not far from the entrance. And I was amazed. But he had taken to heart his life actions and repented and earned his way into the point that he had a place of authority, actually, there in the prison. He was being an encouragement to others to find their way back to God. And prisons can teach us that growth is possible in any environment. The worst mistakes that we make, we can find our way back to God, and we can be an asset for God, no matter what, for peer pressure we're facing. Some inmates find spiritual life, inner peace, and creative outlets while inside of prisons. Others become only more and more angry and determined when they get out what they're going to do and how they're going to retaliate. Prisons can show us that the justice system is flawed and complex. A person visiting prison will likely be exposed to inmates that, with claims of innocence, there was an accomplice that they just became the hit person. The real crook is out running free, and stories of unfair sentencing and racial disparities wrongful convictions. They really don't deserve to be here. They're not the one that should be here. Socioeconomic biases. If they would have had the money, if they would have had a better lawyer, if they would have had a different color skin, they wouldn't be here. They have some kind of story that they framed as being the reason they're there. And I'm aware that the justice system can be a bit like us parents sometimes when we go to try and settle a squabble with our children that was happening in the other room and we didn't see what was happening. We have our assumptions because we know their nature and we know this, we know that very likely this is, and we provide justice based on our assumptions, and we may not always be right. And we do live in a world where the justice system is corrupt, and the justice system, maybe even if with best intention, doesn't always get it right. Well, visiting a prison can be a good thing where you begin to see life through a different lens. You ponder the wonder of the simple things, like walking outside with no fence and choosing your meal and visiting family with a hands-on contact and not through a phone, and luxuries that outside we just take for granted. Prison shows us that environment can shape behaviors. There are usually demographics of people that are more inclined to end up in prison than other demographics, because it reflects on cycles of poverty and trauma and lack of opportunity and community breakdowns, and life is not fair in some of these experiences, where many are somewhat of a victim of bad friendships, maybe. We all are personally accountable before God. I want to emphasize that. We all are. But prisons teach us clearly that environment and our choice of friends influences our outcome in life. Many people are in prison today because of a friend they chose that was not a good friend. Whether that friend should be there instead of them, that is maybe left for debate. But prisons teach us that friends do matter. Prisons teach us that time is ultimately currency. You can't get back the amount of time you spent in a prison. When you step back into the real world, into the regular life, it's a currency. We exchange. The time we spend in prison, we exchange for what could have happened in that period of time. I exchange dollar bills for groceries. I put dollar bills in the bank for interest. And you can't make up for when you could have put the dollar bill in. There's a lost gap there that interest did not accumulate. We are constantly exchanging. And prisons remind us that it's an exchange of time. And it's technically lost time. But it don't have to be wasted time. It can be a time of growth. It can be a time of finding God. It can be a time of reset that gives us great opportunity when the people get out of prison. Well, what about a cemetery? What can we learn by visiting a cemetery? A cemetery is the ultimate equalizer of life. Some of us here in life maybe live on less than an acre. Some maybe a couple of acres. Some maybe have lots of acres that we can walk across and we can say, this is all mine. Maybe there's some of us can drive stretches of highway and look to our left and look to our right and say, everything you see here is mine. I know of people that had that kind of wealth. But a cemetery is a great equalizer. All the people are on the same plane. They're under the same soil. They need the same amount of real estate. It's where the powerful and the powerless all occupy a plot of land in very close proximity to each other. The rich woman can pay a beautician to come and spice up reality in the hospital, but I've never heard of a beautician going to a graveyard. Only one thing remains above the surface, and that is the memories that we left behind. The life that we led that people reflect on. And they only remain for the duration of the generation that knew us. Unless we found our way into a history book in some way that people would read about us, when we're in the graveyard, our life influence is over. Cemeteries remind us of the brevity and the fragility of life. I've now reached the stage of life where I'm old enough to walk through some graveyards and know the people that are there. Know the life they lived. People like my grandpa that I watched on a 28-year-long journey with Parkinson's. And I live right beside him. I got a firsthand, those memories go with me. How he related to life experiences. He is no longer here, but his memories are here. And graveyards remind us that it's our turn. What life brings our way and how we relate to it. Our children and our grandchildren are watching. And there's a time we're going to be under that dirt and all they're going to have to reflect on is how we dealt with life. How we went about life. We're not promised 80 years. When you walk in a cemetery, you see dates on those stones that reflect people gone at various ages of life. It reminds us that we have no assurance of tomorrow. It reminds us of the reality of death and the transience of earthly life. I'm not one that finds a lot of consolence and comfort in visiting a graveyard. My father is there, but I know that he's not there. It's just his bones inside a concrete vault in the ground. The only hope a cemetery holds to me is the hope of the resurrection, that I know that body is going to rise again. I had a great dad that did his best for me. Not perfect, but he did his best for me. The cemetery is not a place of endings. 1 Thessalonians 4:14 says, "For if we believe that Jesus died and rose again, even so God will bring with him all those who sleep in Jesus." And a cemetery inspires us to live a life that when it's our turn, whether we had time to prepare or didn't have time to prepare, when it's our turn, we will rise to be with Jesus. So let's consider, lastly, the most blessed place we can go to understand life, and the only place we can go to get a very comprehensive understanding of life that goes way beyond what a hospital or a prison or a cemetery can tell us, and that is to the house of God. Psalm 73, I'd like to read a few verses there. You know, life just has its way of wearing on us. I don't know how many of you can relate with the psalmist here in Psalm 73, but he was at a place, as he looked around, life just felt so unfair. You see, when we visit a hospital, in prison and cemetery, we learn a lot about cause and effect in life, and a lot of things make sense. We can connect obesity with health and the breaking of law with justice, and the cemeteries can remind us that a high rate of speed can equal death for a young man. But these places can also remind us that life isn't fair. The Christian who has smoked a cigarette, who hasn't smoked a cigarette, may have died younger than the man that's buried not far down that was a chain smoker. There could be a man or woman in a nursing home. The one is stressed that their money will reach to the end of their life and they're going to be a burden to their children. And maybe the other one there is trying to contemplate what they should be doing more with their money so it doesn't spoil their children. They're not worried one bit about their money not reaching. Our natural mind wants to question these things. How can these great disparities coexist if there's a God that is in charge of the events of our life? How can these disparities happen? The psalmist was in much perplexity over these kind of things. You know, why does one bullet successfully take out Charlie Kirk and another graze the ear? The psalmist faced questions like we do about life because we all live life and we notice what we perceive as injustices. So where do we go? Well, the psalmist said he was almost losing his equilibrium. He said his feet had well nigh slipped until he went into the house of God, until he allowed the things of God to bring life back into perspective. I like to read Psalm 73, starting verse 1. "Truly God is a good God to Israel, even as to such as are of a clean heart. But as for me, my feet were almost gone. My steps had well nigh slipped. For I was envious at the foolish when I saw the prosperity of the wicked. For there are no bands in their death, but their strength is firm. They are not in trouble as other men, neither are they plagued like other men. Therefore pride compasseth them about as a chain. Violence covereth them as a garment. Their eyes stand out with fatness. They have more than heart could wish. They are corrupt and speak wickedly concerning oppression. They speak loftily. They set their mouth against the heavens, and their tongue walketh through the earth. Therefore his people return hither, and the waters of a full cup are wrung out to them. And they say, How doth God know? And is there knowledge in the Most High? Behold, these are the ungodly who prosper in the world. They increase in riches. Verily I have cleansed my heart in vain and washed my hands in innocency. For all the day long have I been plagued and chastened every morning. If I say, I will speak thus, behold, I should offend against the generations of thy children. When I thought to know this, it was too painful for me." You see, it was a painful pondering on his part, the unfairness of life. The hospitals and the prisons and the cemeteries we visit will not always tell a story that fits our mind picture of fairness. A fair God. A God that cares. The psalmist saw ungodly people whose death experience was not riddled in pain like godly people. He saw ungodly people that had good health right up to the end. In fact, they wore their pride like an ornament, it says in verse 6. Their ego emboldened them to take advantage of people and to boast. They were not running lean in any respect. They had wealth beyond what they could ever wish for. They defied God's laws like nobody's business, and they were influencers across the land, and they got away with it. If he would speak like he feels like, it would not go well, he says in verse 15. It would be an offense that would last generations if he would say what he really feels like saying. When I thought to know it, it was too painful for me until I went to the sanctuary of God. Let's pick up again verse 17. Until I went into the sanctuary of God, then understood I their end. Surely thou didst set them in slippery places. Thou castest them down into destruction. How are they brought into desolation? As in a moment they are utterly consumed with terrors. As a dream when one awaketh, so, O Lord, when thou awakest, thou shalt despise their image. Thus my heart was grieved, and I was pricked in my reins. So foolish was I, and ignorant. I was as a beast before thee. Nevertheless, I am continually with thee. Thou hast holden me by my right hand. Thou shalt guide me with thy counsel, and afterwards receive me to glory. Who have I in heaven but thee? And there is none upon the earth that I desire beside thee. When my flesh and my heart faileth, but God is the strength of my heart and my portion forever. For lo, they that are far from thee shall perish. Thou hast destroyed all them that go a-whoring from thee. But it is good for me to draw near to God. I have put my trust in the Lord God, that I may declare all thy works. When we go to hospitals, we see the frailty of man. We see how much, yet how little doctors know and truly can control. When we go to prisons, we see authority used and we see authority abused. When we go to the cemetery, we can ask, why did God take them from us so soon when we needed them so badly? But when we go to church, we see and experience the God that is still with us. The God who is still holding our right hand. The God who is the strength of our heart. When we go to the house of God, we put our questions to rest in faith in his workings. We realize anew that we, like Job, can't see all that is playing out in the scenes that are happening in the spiritual world because of what is happening in our physical world. We only see the physical side. We don't see how God is using this experience, maybe in the life of someone else. Verse 27, "For lo, they that are far from thee shall perish. Thou hast destroyed all them that go whoring after thee. But it is good for me to draw near to God. I have put my trust in the Lord God, that I may declare all thy works." The experiences we relate to are not the end of God's story. God is still at work. As long as there's breath in people's lives, the story is not fully written. And God is observing all that is happening. He is the great record keeper. Verse 20, "As a dream when one awaketh, so, O Lord, when thou awakest, thou shalt despise their image." God is not going to be fooled. We're familiar with dreams. Dreams that are all muddled, lots of moving pieces. And we wake up and we discover what seems so real was only a dream. Sometimes it's so scary and such a relief, and sometimes it's almost disappointing. We wonder how that would have ended. When we go to the house of God, we are reminded that life may feel dreamy. Life may feel scary at times. But God is not dreaming. God is wide awake. God is not naive to the realities we are facing. God will arrest life experiences in His time. The night of grace is not going to be indefinite for any of us. God is going to wake up at some point and deal with the good things and the bad things that we allow to happen in our life while we lived under His grace. But until that day, we keep on visiting the hospitals and the nursing homes and the prison yards and the graveyards and see what we can learn from them. And we tarry on in the grace that He's giving to us, because someday we will see Him face to face. And it is good for us to draw near to God and to put our trust in the Lord God. I hope this morning was another opportunity to remind us to keep on doing that. Shall we kneel for a word of prayer?